This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 225 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com, and joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Hi-ho, everybody.
So how did you find Vivid?
Well, I got off the plane, got the train into the city, got off the train station, there it was.
That's... yeah. That's one good thing about Sydney's trains. They do... they stop at reasonably convenient spots.
Well, that's how I found it. I'm serious. I got off and there, straight in front of me. It was there immediately. It was not hard to find at all, Bruce.
Fantastic. You know, good to hear.
Did some people have trouble finding it, though? It's the Opera House, Bruce. It's a fairly well-known iconic structure in Sydney, and they lit it up with stuff.
Reasonably iconic, yes.
Yes, yeah. So, no, it was...
How did you find the experience, then?
Oh, the experience. I see where you're coming from now. it was all right.
Yeah?
Yeah, but I've got to say, look, raining, cold, windy for two nights, it dampens the spirit somewhat, you must say.
Yeah. It was really tough how they put you up in such a hovel as well.
Oh, I know. There's these $400 a night hotels, I tell you. I'm going to demand something decent next time. With the open fireplace and the lounge suite and the fluffy slippers and lovely fluffy bathrobe to lay on and
excellent.
But that experience was pretty good. Now look, I got to say, Vivid was good, but I don't know. Is there enough going on? Was it a little bit too sparse? Especially when you've got big crowds to try and get through to get to places.
Yeah.
If it takes you 40 minutes and you get there's only one thing to look at, that's,
It's a bit ho-hum. And the other, the common criticism I've seen a lot of, primarily on Facebook, but from Sydney-based people, and not just photographers, basically saying... Yeah, it's just the same thing as we saw last year, after 7 years, I think they've been doing this thing, we shine lights and pretty patterns on buildings, but there's really nothing new to it.
Yeah.
Once you've done it once.
And the, are they lighting the same buildings every time? Yeah, I know you kind of got to light the Opera House.
Yeah,
but
and the
are
bridge.
They doing all the other, are they doing all the other same ones every time, or are they doing something different, or... Yeah, that's the thing. And I guess, look, not everyone's been to it, so it was my first time there.
Sure.
So, I think it's a wonderful thing to see that many photographers, people out there with their cameras and the tripods.
Definitely.
Wanting to take photos. I love that. That warms the cockles and even the subcockles of my heart. to see that's I walk around with a big smile on my face when I see people with cameras, that many people with cameras especially, and most of them appearing to have some idea what they were doing. Which is great. So it's a great as far as for getting people an excuse to sort of get in the same zone, same area, and shoot together is a wonderful thing. So you can only encourage that. But I said, how do you keep making it fresh? How do you keep doing something different with it? But I reckon they should project a movie onto the Opera House next time and have an app where you can hear the audio.
Yeah, now you're talking.
Just something or you make it an audio visual experience. Okay, you can showcase the photos or the images, but then you link it to music. That's you download the app and you listen to the music, then so it becomes more symphonic,
Yeah.
Gee, I should have patented that before I said it.
You can
scrub that off the podcast. Can't you? something that sort of how do you take it to the next level? How do you connect more people? Make everyone put headphones on so they don't talk to each other. but connect them with the experience, I guess. Is the thing, And whilst I know they had sound playing at some of them. If you're on the opposite side of the harbour, you're not hearing the sound that's being played on the Opera House.
No, that's right. Yeah. So having it as a streamed event would make more sense.
Just something that, and then you could work, imagine something like Mickey Mouse's Fantasia.
Mm.
Yeah, with the music and up on the Opera House. Yeah, that'd be kind of...
Well, even if you didn't use you know, something like that that's so heavily copyright protected, but maybe you have it as an opportunity to expose the works of up-and-coming filmmakers or, you know, local photographers who are doing video, you know, short films and things and using that content.
And use opera as the music, because it's the opera house. Because
the opera house, yeah, for sure. No, that's just good concept.
Yeah, thank you, dude, yeah. I'll take 20% of all the entry fee for everybody for next year's show. Oh, that's right. It's free, isn't it? That's right.
Yeah.
I was back a loser. There you go.
Hey, while we're talking about movies.
Backing losers.
While we're talking about movies, because I'm not going to associate losers with this, because I don't want to offend the one listener we've got.
Yeah, good point, yeah.
Dave Clark's poster.
Oh, I know, what a corker.
I know I say this every week. If you haven't liked the Facebook page yet, you have to go and do it just to see the posters that Dave Clark puts up each week. This week, it's Shutters Inc. The Movie. I think this is probably the best one he's done.
Well done. Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be hard because the rest are fairly crap. but he's on the steady improve.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to appear vain. I don't want to appear like I'm taking offence.
Okay.
I know it's supposed to be a caricature.
Yeah.
But why do I always have a monobrow? I've hardly got any eyebrows as it is, let alone one big one. You know, and he keeps making references and monobrow. Well, it's kind of odd because I don't really got one. I can hardly see the two that I've got, let alone one. But it was very funny, I've got to say.
Yeah. It was.
A trip to Sydney.
Yeah. It generated so much interest on the page that I got a notification in the middle of the day. It had only been up about an hour, I guess, and I got another notification, and I went, oh, somebody else has liked it or whatever, and I've clicked on the notification, and it said, this post is generating 95% more interest than anything else on the Shutters Inc. podcast Facebook page.
That's because two people went to it rather than just the one we normally get.
And it then wanted me to spend money to promote the post. I went, as if.
Why? This one's doing well. Why promote this? It's funny. I love it. Is Sydney a big enough town for the two of them?
It's fantastic. Well
the
done, Dave.
The get arrested in Oxford Street for making lengthy exposures. It's clever stuff. But here he goes again. Bert attends a swingers night and almost loses his monobrow. I'm putting a photo of my eyebrows up for next week's episode.
maybe you need to photograph them and just send it to Dave so that he can use them in the posters.
Man. Too funny stuff. Too funny. He's a good lad, our Dave Clark.
He is.
Yeah. No pressure for next week, though, Dave.
You keep raising the bar, mate. Yeah. At the end of last week's episode, I was going to...
Just before you get into that.
Sure.
At the end of last week's episode, we kind of ran out of time. You were going to talk about your approach to panoramas.
Thank you, mate. I was.
Can we refresh that and get back into that again? Yeah?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
So Harry Melos had expressed an interest a couple of weeks ago of, you know, picking my brains about my approach to shooting panoramas. So I thought, well, you know, let's just discuss it on the podcast, just in case anyone else has sort of, you know, had a bit of a think about, or, you know, wouldn't mind shooting panos but don't know how to do it or don't know what the approach is. And like anything photographic, I don't think there's a right and a wrong way. There's just, you know, each person's interpretation. So I thought I'd just run through a few of the things that I think about when I'm shooting a pano. And by pano, I'm generally referring to a multi-image stitched panorama, not just shooting with a wide-angle lens and then cropping to a 3-to-1 aspect ratio, although that is a valid approach. It's a subjective thing. I don't think there's a right and a wrong. It's just whatever you want to do and however you want to interpret it. So a couple of things that come to mind for me are definitely shoot with a tripod. Yes. And one thing I have learned
And a camera.
And a camera, yeah. Camera always helps. One thing I've learned through bitter experience is that a ball head on a tripod is not as effective as one of those, I don't know what the name for them is, but the
they're called non-ball heads. Yeah,
thank you, mate. The non-ball head tripod head. The type that has three rotating axes that you can control independently. So you can, you know, loosen off a thing and then you swing it, you know, left and right, and then you can tighten it up and lock it into place. You can tilt it forward and backwards, lock that into place. Set your horizon, lock that into place. That particular type of ball head I find to be far more effective than a ball head, simply because you can get your horizon level, and then as you sweep through your panorama to shoot all of your various images, you know that your horizon will remain balanced on the frame, on each frame. When that becomes even more critical is the wider the angle of the lens, because once you get wider than probably about 35 mil, you start to get linear distortion of your horizon. So when you shoot, like, you know, I've got a 20 mil wide angle, if I don't have the horizon dead center with that lens, then the horizon appears curved. And so if you go and shoot, you're right there, mate?
Me?
He's thumping and banging in the background.
Is there? Yeah. Is that loud, is it?
It is.
Okay.
Anyway, so if you don't have the horizon consistently level and straight, when you then try and drop your multiple images into Photoshop, it can throw the algorithm out of the window completely. And I've had some really weird and wacky results come back simply because the horizon wasn't level in each frame. So that type of head is much better than a ball head, in my opinion. With regards focal lengths, or not just focal lengths, but lens choice, I actually find that a prime lens is a better choice than a zoom lens, simply because zoom lenses can move their focal length when you didn't intend them to do so.
Yeah.
So I find using a prime lens a much better choice. Of late, I've found that I prefer to shoot with my, you know, either my 20mm wide angle or my 50mm prime, just so that you know that the focal length will remain consistent throughout every frame. Parallax error is something that you want to bear in mind. And I've spoken about this years ago on the podcast. It comes down to the axis, the vertical axis of your tripod through which the head rotates is not in line with your lens of your camera. Assuming, of course, that you are not using a proper panoramic head. If you're just using a regular tripod head, then you have this parallax error where the axis along the lens is not centered over the, you know, the axis on which the head of the tripod is rotating, and that causes what's called a parallax error, and that can be evidenced when you, if you grab your widest angle lens, look through it, line up two objects, and then rotate that lens either way, left or right, you'll notice that those two objects move out of alignment, and that's a parallax error. Another thing that I found, and again through trial and error, if you are not going to shoot with a parallel a panoramic head, which aims to get the barrel of your lens over that nodal point, and you're going to shoot with just a regular tripod head, if you have a battery grip vertical, you know, battery pack vertical grip on your SLR body, take it off, because that battery grip moves your lens even further away from the vertical axis around which your tripod head is rotating. And that just makes that whole parallax error thing even worse. So I found that removing the vertical grip in order to shoot a panorama with a standard head works a lot better than leaving it on there. Once it comes to actually shooting, I personally prefer to shoot raw. for all the reasons I've discussed in the past. You know, the ability to change white balance after the fact. You've got extra bits of data to play with that you don't get in a JPEG. You know, your raw image is generally a 12 or a 14-bit image, where a JPEG is only 8-bit. So there's more room to move with adjusting exposure and whatnot. With regards exposure, my take is look through the whole scene that you want to shoot as a panorama. You may be going to shoot 10 images. Look for the portion of that sweep where the light is brightest, and go to manual exposure, meter for the brightest frame that you're going to shoot, and expose as far to the right as you can. In other words, push your exposure as far as you can without clipping your highlights, because generally over the course of a panorama, and obviously it changes depending on what you're shooting, but over the course of those 10 images, you may find that by the time you get to the opposite end of the sweep, you might be, you know, a couple of stops underexposed. So you want to have your brightest scene exposed as hot as possible so that you've got as much shadow detail in those underexposed frames as you can possibly get. With regards then doing the multi-image stitching in, say, Photoshop, I think Adobe recommend, I think it's 15% overlap. I actually prefer to shoot around about 1/3 of the frame overlap between each frame.
Just on the weekend in the Vivid Festival, Peter Eastway, well-known landscape photographer, he says he prefers personally to shoot between 40 and 60%.
Yep.
Just as another viewpoint and another way of...
Yeah. Yep. Look, I don't think you can... You know, well, I suppose you could go overboard.
With 110% overlap.
Yes, exactly. But it certainly doesn't hurt to have some extra pixels for the algorithm to play with, you know, to make sure that you've got enough data for Photoshop to not only, you know, line up the layers, but also to blend the pixel data between, you know, adjacent layers so that it gets a nice smooth transition. So yeah, so I like to shoot around 30 to 40% overlap. One thing, if you are an avid landscape photographer, I know I love shooting landscapes, and one filter that I almost always have on is a circular polarizer. If you're going to shoot a multi-image pano, get the circular polarizer off, because it will create too much variation in the blues in your sky, so that when you come to stitch a multi-image panorama together, you'll get something that goes from the deepest, richest blue at one end through to almost pure white at the other end, and that's probably not the effect you want. On top of that, as you move from one image to the next, you get this sort of undulation between lights and darks in the blues in the sky. So I've, again, through trial and error, found that having a circular polarizer on during the shooting actually causes more problems once you try and stitch it all together. It's better to actually shoot without it and then simulate the filter in post-processing if you have to later on. And the other thing, shoot vertical. Don't shoot landscape. Yep. I find that shooting vertical gives you, you know, a little bit more, you know, foreground to, you know, up in the sky to play with, you know, a little bit more vertical depth. And if you've got plenty of overlap, you can just shoot as many frames as you like, and, you know, you'll have plenty of data to play with, so you get a nice image. And that then means that once you get to the end of the process, you've got plenty of room to crop to get to where you want to be with your final 3:1 panorama. Once you've done all that, it's then a case of moving on to the post-processing. I know there are other software options available, but I personally have only ever used Photoshop. I'm using CS5 or 5.5, one or the other. And to do that, you simply go to the file menu in Photoshop, and under Automate, you'll find the option for Photo Merge. And you can do one of two things. You can either not bother opening the images first and just going File, Automate, Photo Merge, and from the window that pops up, click on the button to browse to look for the files that you want. Or you can have all of the images open in Photoshop, and then when you bring up that dialog box for the Photo Merge function, there's another button that says Select Open Files, in other words, the files that you've already got open. Once you have... by the way, if you shot RAW, you will need to export from Lightroom, Aperture, whatever it is that you're using as your RAW converter, to some sort of intermediate format, probably TIFF, because that's lossless. Once you've selected all your open, or all your files to open, or to select for the photo merge, you click on OK. Photoshop will then ask you what sort of way you want to lay up your images, and there's a few different options there, and I won't go into all of them. I'm sure you can work those out for yourself according to what you want to do. And once it has run that feature, what it will do is it will look for the common pixels, you know, between the edges of adjacent files, and it will do its best to align the layers, you know, in the right order and the right sequence. And also in the, sorry, I should have also mentioned, in the photo merge dialog box, there is also a checkbox which says seamlessly blend images. This is actually doing two features or two functions that you can also find under the edit menu, which is auto align layers and auto blend layers. So if for some reason you didn't want to use the photo merge feature, you could do this manually by running those two functions. And again, it would be a case of dragging all of your source images into one master document on separate layers, select all of the layers, go edit, auto align layers, and once Photoshop has done that, they'll all be lined up, but they won't be blended. So you could do that if you wanted to take complete and utter control over the blending between layers for yourself. And then you would, again, leaving all of those layers selected, go back to the edit menu and go auto blend layers, and then Photoshop will go ahead and do all the blending for you. Either way, you're going to end up with a big PSD document with a background layer plus a layer for each of the source images that you've got. And after you have either run photo merge or done the edit auto blend layers function, you're going to end up with a mask that has been created by Photoshop on every layer, where Photoshop will decide which pixels from which layer it's going to use, and it will have blended them all together. One thing I didn't realize when I first started out doing panoramas this way using Photoshop is that when it does its auto blend, it's not a simple black and white for the masking. Sometimes it will mask with shades of gray. So sometimes it's saying, I'm going to use 50% of the pixel value from this layer and 50% of the same pixel from the next layer. It's not always just a simple case of, you know, a black mask or a white mask. Just something to be aware of. Yeah, and that's pretty much it. And so once you've got your multiple layers in your Photoshop document, then you can, you know, go nuts with your post-processing. You know, you can start doing, you know, global adjustments with adjustment layers. I personally recommend using adjustment layers all the time. You know, don't destroy your pixels. Use your adjustment layers to their fullest. If you want to apply an effect that you only want it to say, you know, maybe it's like an exposure adjustment, you only want it to affect one side of the panorama because, you know, there was a shift in exposure across the whole thing. What I would do is set up the adjustment for the exposure so that it looks right where you want it to look. It might look completely out of control at the other end, but then apply a gradient mask to the adjustment layer, and that way your exposure effect will be strong at one end, but then it will fade out to nothing at the other end, and then hopefully over the, you know, the width of your panorama, you'll end up with a nice gradual effect that is, you know, invisible to the viewer. And so you'll go on with all the different, you know, tools at your disposal within Photoshop, you know, adding adjustment layers and masking bits and pieces here, there and everywhere. So I think that's about it for my description of how I approach panoramas. Like, you know, I always say, you know, there's no right and wrong with this stuff, you know, it's completely up to personal taste. But yeah, that's my take on it all. Glenn, you were going to throw in a couple of extra ideas.
Well, there's two things I'd say. First up, ditto.
Yep.
All of that. You know, actually, it'd be a ditto with a capital D, and it's a big ditto because I'd agree with all of that. But the other thing is just a visual tool I'd like to use.
Yeah.
To pre-visualize my panoramas.
Right.
To know sort of where I want to start, where I want to finish in the images, all the sort of, you know, where's the best place to set up, where's the best, all the sort of stuff that, yeah, how am I going to produce the best image of where I'm at?
Hmm.
I like to do what I like to call my pre-pano, yeah, with my iPhone.
Oh, yep.
So I like to just kind of just do some sweet panos with my iPhone just to check a few different angles, a few different positions, any problems I may come across that I can't sort of visualize until I start doing it. Because it only takes near a minute to do a pano on an iPhone.
Yep.
Do half a dozen of those from a few different spots.
Yep.
And that'll sort of help you tell, you know, where's the best place to set up, any problems you may come up against, some visual, you know, visual clues to what the best start and finish points are going to be. And it just kind of helps you, as I said, I'll call it a pre-pano because it helps you pre-visualize what the end result's going to be like.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's absolutely just my little thing.
Yep.
Yeah. For the few panos I do, being a people shooter, I tend not to have a lot of pano work going on. But yeah, I will be practicing my pano skills for New Zealand next year. So
oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Quite a few of those. I hate to say it, Bruce, but I think, yeah, for the first time in our Shutters Inc. history, we've actually given out some useful advice. I'd just like to apologise to the listeners now.
We had to start somewhere.
That's happened eventually, I guess, you know. So, once again, sorry, everybody. That was totally unintentional, and we'll blame Harry Mellos for that.
Oh, dear.
If actually learning something is something you listeners would like to do from time to time on this podcast, feel free to ask questions like Harry did.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
Just a little tip. So what else is on our agenda for the week?
While I've been rattling on for the last 15 minutes, we've had some...
I finished a crossword, which is where all those
excellent
and bangs were.
Well, while you were finishing your crossword, we've had some input on the Shutters Inc. page. Adam Davidson wanted to know, when and where is the premiere of the Shutters Inc. movie? It'll probably be screening in some dodgy, lowbrow art house cinema. Somewhere without a red carpet, I would imagine.
It's Dave Clark seems to think it's probably going to be in Tasmania. It'll be a double header premiere with Evan Shue's new movie, One Shoe Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Nice.
So, So what else? Let's whilst we're on a roll of quality photographic information. Do we have anything else?
Oh, no, the rest was all crap.
I found a product this week which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
From a memory card manufacturer I can't say I've heard the name of before, which doesn't necessarily mean an awful lot because I'm not a particularly observant man. Strange being a photographer and not being very observant, but you know. But it's a company called Wise, which I can't say I've heard of before.
As in WISE?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And have you ever heard of them?
Not as a memory card manufacturer,
Good. Oh, I've heard the word before, too. Yeah. Yeah. But they've just announced Duo compact flashcards. And basically what they are is they basically perform a RAID layout on their card.
Wow.
So when you shoot, it writes the same file to two different zones on the card as a backup.
On the one card?
On the one card.
So it's doing some sort of partitioning of the card.
Partitioning the card, yeah, and recording the file to each side, which I think is incredibly clever.
Yeah, you know, okay.
I don't know what the future of it is, because so many cameras are coming out with dual slots these days, but for those people with older cameras,
It's an interesting thought, but generally, if something's going to happen to the card, it's going to affect the whole card.
Possibly.
Like, you put the card through the wash, or,
Yeah, but CF cards go through the wash very well, though. I've done it many, many times.
Right.
Many. I mean, most of my cards, you don't know what brand they are, because I've washed the labels off.
Right. Okay.
And I'm serious about that.
Really?
Absolutely. Been through the wash. I don't know. One card must have been through about 10 times.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Oh, works a treat. Yeah, the camera's shorted out, but the card still works. No.
Wow.
Yeah, they're incredibly resilient, the compact flash cards.
Wow. Okay.
Well, mine have been so far, and that's over multiple different brands too. So,
yeah.
Right. I don't think I'm going to be out there advertising them as weatherproof yet, but yeah.
The other thing is, like, I mean, you're saying, cameras coming out with dual slots, like, your Sony cards have, your Sony cameras have both CF and memory stick slots.
They're still using memory stick, are they?
Yeah, believe it or not. Wow. I don't go near it, but, and I think your Nikons shoot dual SDs.
Dual SDs, and some Canons, I think, do CF and SD.
But there would also be there are some high-end bodies that have got this now, and I'm sure, as time goes by, there'll be more and more of the lower-end bodies will get this as well. The ability to Wi-Fi dump straight to your laptop while you're shooting in the field.
Yeah.
And so maybe, before long, maybe we won't even have memory cards in cameras.
The biggest problem with those is speed, though.
Right.
To me, the way most people shoot these days, the Wi-Fi would never be able to keep up with the file sizes, the megapixels that the cameras are these days. Yeah.
And particularly if you're shooting sport in RAW format or something.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, you're talking, let's say... it's okay to for
well my maybe, my RAWs are 40 megs each, so
exactly, so that's going to take some time to Wi-Fi across, isn't it? So that's going to have to change fairly dramatically before that's going to make a real impact, I would imagine. But we'll stick to this one. Yeah, memory cards are so cheap, all this sort of systems, requiring laptops and all this other stuff. Yeah, it's not, you don't want to go for a nice hike through the countryside up over hills. It's bad enough having to carry your camera, let alone your laptop.
Yeah, exactly.
Just so you can keep transferring. That's a very large memory card you've got there, sir. So I think cards are still going to be the way forward for a while. Yeah, unless they go straight to the cloud, of course,
Well, that's fine all the while you're shooting in environments where you've got access, but, when you've taken a photo tour to Patagonia or somewhere like that where you're in the middle of nowhere, you're not going to be accessing the cloud anytime, other than walking through the clouds. You're not going to have access to the internet in places like that.
Exactly. Well, I mean, if you're I have Optus phone service, you don't have that. I went to my daughter to the dentist the other day, and there's no signal there. A funny story. I was standing on a fair mound of earth not long ago. On top of this mound of earth was this tree stump. And I was standing on top of this tree stump with my arm extended fully above my head. And I'm 6'2", so my arm was up at 8 foot, 9 foot sort of region, with my phone in my hand. And this guy's walked past. He goes, "Oh, with Optus, are you, mate?" Yep. It doesn't matter what. Your signals can be difficult. And that was 5 minutes from downtown Melbourne.
Right. Wow.
You don't have to be anywhere particularly isolated sometimes. So have lack of signals. That'd be incredibly frustrating. But you can't shoot because you can't upload to the cloud. So I think memory cards are with us for a while. But it's interesting. This dual slot is interesting. I don't know. It's This duo card, as you say, if something goes wrong.
So, will it work in any camera?
Well, it's a standard CF card.
Okay. So, one would have thought that it would be a function of the camera to how it writes the data to the card.
Not according to this lot. Mind you, the biggest problem is the most of the announcement of it's in Japanese.
So right.
But yeah, it's
interesting.
It's apparently it's going to let you do it.
Yep.
How? I don't know much about technical stuff to start with. But it's interesting, if nothing else.
Yeah. Now, just coming back to Vivid.
Yes.
There was an interesting story that hit the web through the week regarding Destination New South Wales censoring one of the outdoor photographic exhibitions that was to be a part of Vivid Sydney. I don't know if you heard about this, but basically there were photographs within this exhibition that the organisers at Destination New South Wales felt were too confronting to be displayed, you know, larger than life on the side of a building. And as a result, they decided not to show these images projected on the side of the building, and they moved it to an indoor exhibition only. And the story that I saw by Philip George on a website called theconversation.com, one of the things that he sort of stated as a bit of a counter-argument to this was, well, hang on, you see images as bad, if not worse than this, on the news every night on the TV. So at what point is it okay to, you know, censor the display of images like this? And at what point does it become a little bit silly to say, no, this isn't okay, when you see the same sort of thing on the telly every night?
Assuming you turn the television on.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, so you make a conscious choice to turn the news on, knowing that there may be things that come on there that will be unpleasant.
Mm-hmm.
As a dad of a 5 3/4-year-old girl, whenever the news comes on, I very quickly change it over because I'm horrified about what may come on.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and because she's young, you know, and if she's 10, it might be a different story. I'm not going to try and hide her from what the world is, but at her age right now, she doesn't need that. Maintain the innocence. And if you're walking down the street with your child to go show them the pretty lights in the opera house, and from what I'm told, one of the images that was going to be projected was of a dead child in the street. That's
fair enough.
But I don't know. You know, it's censorship is a tricky thing. You know, what I heard about when I heard it was discover New South Wales who were trying to do the censoring. I thought, well, what is someone showing photos of New South Wales in not a good light? They were rubbish bins and stuff because they're a tourism department. Basically, they don't want to show New South Wales looking bad.
No,
and I don't think censoring images of war, as an example, is their right to do that. Yeah, who are Discover New South Wales? They're a tourism bureau. So why is it up to them to decide whether they should or shouldn't allow those images? I would have thought the Vivid Festival people themselves could have made a moral or conscious choice on that, decide whether those images are appropriate to have up there. Especially, they didn't have any nude women dancing across the opera house.
No.
Yeah, but I'm sure an artist somewhere would like to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where censorship is incredibly tricky, you know. And art in itself is going beyond things like the war photos, etc. Art is
subjective.
Exactly. Yep. I mean, there's a guy in Melbourne, an artist in Melbourne, just got arrested this week for child pornography.
Right.
Because he superimposed faces of children onto people involved in sexual acts.
Right.
In a very, very small part of a massive collage.
Right.
And it was actually an homage to this other artist from back in the 60s or 70s.
Right.
And but apparently it had to look really hard, and I don't know how explicit the photos were being superimposed on, but he's now, they're pretty much saying they're going to charge him for child porn.
Wow.
For producing child pornography by superimposing a face of a child over something else.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a grey area.
Mm.
I mean, I'm not condoning his actions. This is the first I'd heard of it, but
yeah.
I don't know where I stand on that. That's tough because he didn't coerce children into doing anything. It was simply digital art.
Is he inciting people to do stuff though? I don't know. And not having seen anything about it, but all these photographers from the last 30 or 40 years who photographed pre-teens without clothes on,
yep,
that have gotten into all sorts of trouble, and some of them are completely harmless images. There was a woman in America who photographed her sister's children bouncing on their bed. Two of them had basically their pajamas on, but they're very skimpy pajamas because it was hot summer, and one was just wearing a nappy. But because they were bouncing up and down the bed, and she got arrested, the mother got arrested for allowing kids for child porn. And
what?
this is back in the days of film, and it was a thing that went on for years.
Wow.
Yeah. So I said, there's all sorts of this weird. It's probably a far too deep a subject to get into for a podcast, but it's. Anything to do with censorship or anything to do with setting boundaries on things is, as you say, it's a grey area. It's very hard, And who's right and who's wrong? Who's in a position to make a judgment on everything? I wouldn't know. It wouldn't be a task I'd ever want.
No. Yeah. No.
So, interesting. But I wrote up that censorship thing for the newsletter I do weekly for the Australian photo retail industry. Wrote it up on that. So that was an interesting thing to see what was being done.
Yeah.
And speaking of photographers and photography and everything else, we both noted a similar article this week in Chicago.
We did, yes. The Chicago Tribune laid off, 28 of its photographers?
Chicago Sun-Times.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. The link that I had grabbed was from the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah, the Chicago Tribune was writing about it.
Right,
Chicago Sun-Times, which does the newspaper, the Chicago Sun-Times, plus they do 39 suburban daily and weekly newspapers as well.
Right.
So they sacked all 28 of their photographers, including a Pulitzer Prize-winning photographer.
Yep. I saw someone make the comment that, yes, he might have been a Pulitzer-winning photographer, but that was back in 1982.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, fair enough. Okay, so it's been a while, but...
Einstein was pretty... he did it a long time ago, but the stuff's still fairly relevant.
Yeah. Good point. Good point.
That crappy stuff still seems to work.
Imagine your body being buried while you're still in it. Imagine the horror.
Stop.
Right? Struggle.
Stop.
Struggling
stop.
Makes it worse. Imagine
stupid bloody... Ad, could you hear that?
You ran out of tape, did you?
Could you hear that?
No.
Oh, I just loaded up that web page and it had a bloody video ad on it that I couldn't stop.
So you're running out of tape.
Who uses tape?
No. There's the irony, my man. There's the irony.
Just hang on, I need to turn the lacquer over and start on the other side.
Just engraving the next wax disc.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, sorry, what were you talking about?
I think we'd finish. Well, thanks for everyone for listening. we were talking about Chicago.
The photographers. Chicago I'm sure, okay, so it might have been, 1982 that this guy won his Pulitzer Prize. But he probably, obviously he was a very skilled photographer at that point in order to have won a Pulitzer Prize. So,
or he fluked it.
Well,
right place, right time, press the button the right way.
Yeah, okay. I could...
Put him down. I mean, he could be awesome, but
But you would think if this guy has continued to work at the same newspaper for the next 30 years, he's probably a very skilled photographer by now.
Or seriously unimaginative. He's just got no imagination. All he wants to do is go and photograph the puppy shots every week for the
Maybe.
For, yeah, the lost dogs department for the of the newspaper every week. I don't know. Yeah. Just because he's been there a long time doesn't mean he's any good.
Well, that's true. That's true. I can think of some organisations I've worked at in the past where people have been there for a very long time. And
that's right. It's just easier to keep people on sometimes than move. But I guess that this isn't the first newspaper to do this either.
No.
This is going to become increasingly commonplace, but they are expecting their reporters to now do the photographs as well.
Oh, what?
So they're expecting the people who write the words or do investigative journalism. Well, I'm not sure how many suburban weekly newspapers have too much in the way of actual investigative journalism, but they're now expected to they'll shoot them, or they'll have freelance or bypasser captured images from iPhones and stuff as their images for their newspaper.
Yeah.
And what's happening, of course, a lot is unattributed photos stolen from the internet.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah.
You see a lot of newspapers these days, source supplied. Yeah, so it's stolen off the internet, but yeah, if you ask, we'll tell you who took it off. Yeah, that kind of stuff, so.
And, of course, that assumes that, that the photographer even lives in an area where he's likely to know that his material was stolen.
Exactly.
Because if you're looking for, some sort of scene that is not necessarily, geocentric, doesn't have to be taken in Chicago.
Yep.
You could pull an image from, Australia and use it in Chicago, and what likelihood is there that the Australian photographer would know that?
Exactly, unless you're doing image searches for your images on the internet, you'll have no idea what people are doing with them.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's interesting. And there's a quote from a media analyst, which I thought was probably summed it up pretty well, and that they'll always have images around the stories.
Yep.
But will we have great photographically memorable iconic images anymore? Maybe less so.
Yeah.
I guess that's it. Maybe the great images, the Pulitzer Prize winning images, the war winning photographers, all the great shots from the past that are iconic, that's been shot by newspaper photographers, maybe just won't exist anymore. Or be very rare.
Yeah. I don't know. Hard to say. I think wherever there is strife, like we're seeing in Turkey this week, and last year it was Egypt, and there's always going to be strife going on in the world. And I think no matter where that's happening, there are going to be people with iPhones taking photos. Okay, they're not going to have the lens choices, and probably won't possess the compositional skills. But I think there's always going to be documentation of every thing that goes on the planet. Not saying that I necessarily think that, relying on people with iPhones is a better way of documenting it, but I don't think we're ever going to be short of evidence for things that have occurred.
But I don't think it's the evidence. It may be evidence, but is it going to be an iconic image or just an image?
Yeah, exactly.
It'll show us it's happening, and as you said before, we should not to look away.
Yeah.
But is it going to be? Will you have that image, that single image that tells the story, or is it going to be just a thousand images of average quality that shows you the volume of what's happening, Will you ever see another Afghan girl image? Will you ever all this kind of stuff, If there's no one out there paying for them to be there, it's going to get pretty tough, So interesting times, like everything in this world, it's in flux.
Yep, definitely.
And all we need now is a flux capacitor, and we'd be right. We're going to go wherever we damn well please.
That's right. Oh, dear. Something fun and interesting that I saw through the week was an article on Lifehacker, and I followed the trail of links back to the source, which turned out to be makezine.com. And it was a little DIY project that they had for building a reflective prism to use on a flatbed scanner so that you can scan negs into Photoshop. And okay, they're going to come in with the colors reversed, but you know, once you've got them into Photoshop, it's very easy to just do an invert and get your colors the right way round. But basically the idea was that this little triangular reflector box, and they suggest using silver card, you build it and sit it over the top of your negs as you place your negs on your flatbed scanner. And what that does is allow the light to shine back down through the neg so that the scanner can actually see something as it scans your negatives. And it was all based around the idea that, you know, there is much better results to be had by scanning from a neg than scanning from a print that was made from that neg. The neg, even though it's smaller, will have much better quality of information. It won't have been cropped like the print may very well have been. And I know that cropping used to occur with, or does occur with printing, because I used to work in a C41 lab and you wouldn't get the entire 35mm frame onto a 6x4 print. So it was basically just a little DIY contraption, you know, that you could fold, you know, a couple of cuts into a piece of card and fold it up and basically have this thing that would make it easy to use just a normal flatbed scanner as opposed to a proper film or slide scanner for scanning your negs. But Glenn, you had an interesting take on this.
Well, I just thought, just use a mirror. Wouldn't it be easier?
It probably is. So you've got me intrigued now. I'm going to have to go and try it after we finish recording.
Just put a mirror and it bounces the light back down and it's done. I'm one of these people who just wants to keep doing the keep it stupid simple stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to have to try that. So, but anyway,
as easy as humanly possible is all I say. That's
absolutely. Absolutely. So I will put links to that.
I'm just not smart enough for this complex stuff. Prisms, really?
Yeah. Really? Nah. And the only other thing that I was going to mention this week was that DIYphotography.net had an article through the week that featured a video. We've spoken extensively about the Magic Lantern firmware hack for Canon DSLRs. The video actually explains how to do the hack to your Canon DSLR. For those of you who are interested, I'll put that in the show notes so you can go check it out.
Does it have a why you'd want to?
I don't know.
Give you a really justifiable reason why this would be an awesome thing to do.
I remember reading what the firmware upgrade allowed you to do, but I can't remember what it was. Because it was a while back when I first heard about it. It was probably 6 months ago that I first heard about it.
I've known about it for a couple of years, but it's like I could never see the point. You know?
Yeah, well.
But yeah, that's just me though. I'm not a tech guy. You
people
know?
Say the same thing about why would you want to root your Android phone? It's like, well, because I can do what. I knew you'd go there. Because you can do so much more with a phone once you've got root access on the phone than you can when it's stock.
What? You make phone calls and play games and get on Facebook.
No, I can do things more? Once you've got root access to the phone. Yeah, absolutely.
Like what?
Well, what's the biggest downside with your iPhone?
Battery life.
Exactly. And if you saw my comment, you probably didn't see my comments today because the person who
if it's not about me, I pay no attention.
Exactly. Mikey Krillick was saying today on Facebook that he was thinking it was time to ditch the iPhone and go to Android. And I said, one of the best things you can do with your Android phone is to root it, get root access on the phone, and then install an app like Tasker, which can only be installed once you've got root access because the things that Tasker does require access to the hardware, which means getting to the hardware before the operating system gets in the way. And one of the things that I have running on my Samsung Galaxy Note is a routine in Tasker which says whenever the screen is turned off, throttle the CPU back to 500 megahertz. Now, the CPU normally runs at 1.4 gig. And that increases my battery life by about 80% over and above the stock performance of the phone.
Mm.
That alone, to me, makes it worth getting root access on the phone. But now that I've got root access on the phone, there are other things that I can do that utilize the hardware that you can't do with the phone in stock mode.
Like? So,
I knew you'd ask me for another example.
Yeah, go on. Oh, yes.
What's something else you can do?
Can you use it as a nanny cam? Can it not just... Can you set it up so that when someone walks in the room and starts talking, it starts recording so you can hear what they're saying?
I don't know, mate.
Of course, it's just me. It's just what I want to do, you know? You can turn it into a bug, you know, that's what I'm saying.
Maybe you could.
Could use it to scan conversations, and when someone mentions your name, it starts recording so you hear what they're saying bad about you.
Maybe.
Or was that just my paranoia?
Maybe it's just your paranoia.
Hey, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean people aren't trying to kill you.
That's right.
Okay.
That's it.
I've got one bit of news that came off the weekend that I was pleased about. I'm getting access to the new, well, not the semi-new, the kind of newish Fuji X Pro 1s. They're giving one to me, which is rather nice.
Nice. To keep or just to try?
Well, to hang on to for pretty much until the X Pro 2 comes out, and they'll give me one of those. which is pretty awesome. So I'm heading up to central Queensland next weekend. So I'm looking forward to taking that up there and having a bit of a play with that. It'd be rather nice.
Is that one with an interchangeable lens?
Yeah, so they're going to give me a couple of lenses to go with it.
Nice.
Very, very nice. So the lovely people at Fuji, thank you. All that sucking up finally paid off.
Yeah, that's great.
And the one little thing... to add, because I know we're getting close to time out, is we went out for a shoot on Saturday night.
We did.
A very brief, pouring rain, all sort of conditions, model cancelled, all the typical stuff, the new model came, but fairly late into the night, so we didn't have a lot of time to shoot.
Yep.
But it just goes, the way my brain was at on that particular night, just goes to prove just what it's like to be a photographer and how difficult it can be when you've spent an entire day doing with your focus and something else completely different,
right?
And then you got to switch on and be creative. It just doesn't happen.
As
photographers, and this is for everybody who's whenever you go out to shoot for the first, don't put yourself under pressure straight away to produce stuff, because it's rarely going to happen, Get out there and slowly get into the zone. Be prepared to work into it.
It's not something you can just flick a switch and be on.
Well, look, it can sometimes when everything's going in your favour. You happen to be in a place that's got just beautiful light or beautiful environment or all this things are working easily for you.
Yeah.
But when it's nighttime, it's cold, it's raining, you're tired.
Your model hasn't shown up.
you've lugged around, bashed around by thousands of people in the streets to get to where you're going. I mean, that's all not conducive to being in a phrase. So I was in a bit of I wasn't really feeling it on Saturday night.
I have to agree with you.
Yeah, until I started playing around, I just shoved my camera on a really slow shutter speed and just mucked around.
Yeah, right.
I just slowed my shutter speed down to half a second and started shooting stuff and moving the camera and zooming and just get out of the predictability of what I expect to see in a shot.
Right.
Because most of the time when I shoot, exactly what I plan to happen happens.
Yeah. Yep.
Exactly what I plan the shot to look like is what it looks like.
Yeah, because you pre-visualized it, yeah.
Yeah, and whilst that's good, it's also, you can get very formulaic, you can get a bit bored, but when you start doing unpredictable things with your camera and you start to get unpredictable results, it just sort of opens up that creativity and makes you think, oh, what if? And what if I did this? And what if I tried that? And I got a couple of shots on the night which I really like, just from playing around with half a second shutter speeds.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just my way of trying to get myself out of that. I've been focused on trying to run an event all day long. Yeah. And it was a non-shooting event for once, which is not, being an MC, doing speaking, making sure things are working properly. Yeah, that's not the brain space to be out being creative shooting.
No.
And then just to say, well, I'm just gonna have some fun not to put myself under pressure. And then all of a sudden I started feeling good, and the final shot we set up was actually quite nice. But
yeah,
it took me to just to you know, do stupid stuff with my camera and start getting my head working.
Yeah.
You know? And no, face it, we only had 40 minutes of an actual shooting time, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't last long at all.
Not at all. So interesting. Just once again, just exposing yourself to that process, and you know, that people should be aware not to expect too much when they first start off. You know, because a working photographer, the thing they do the least is shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And an amateur photographer, the thing they do the least is shoot. Yeah, as far as the percentage of their life. Well, the percentage of their life.
Oh, okay,
You've got a normal life going on. Yeah, you might read about photography. You might listen to incredible podcasts and this one. you might watch videos, book, all that sort of stuff. But the actual doing, you don't get to do very often. Yeah, so it's hard to be right in the zone the second you get out and get shooting. So, I guess the thing is, relax.
Yep.
Yeah. How many photos do you need?
Yeah. Man, you know what? Even the weekend out at Trundle, you know, and we were, I mean, all of us who went along to that were all vibed up, and, I'd been pre-thinking it for weeks leading up to it. But even for all that, you do still take a little while just to kind of get into the zone. You set up some things and you go, yeah, that's kind of working, but let's do this. And you tweak and it gets better and better. And you sort of hit your stride after, it might be 5 minutes, it might be an hour, but you're generally not on fire from the first frame.
But you think about that weekend away, you were under time pressure the whole time.
Yes, we were.
Yeah, by the time you finally got there with model and everything else, the clock was ticking.
Yeah.
And you knew it was ticking, and you had all these hopes and dreams and plans for the weekend, but in the back of your head, tick, 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 tick. You knew you were under this time pressure to try and get all this visions to happen. So, and so that kind of pressure can affect you as well, you know?
Yeah. Definitely.
So it's all good lessons, basically, is what I'm trying to say. Is just always give yourself a break. Don't try and start off slow, start off easy. When something's not working, just do something totally opposite, or just try something that just kind of breaks the mold a little bit for you, I guess.
Mm.
And just relax. Don't know how many photos you need out of a session, you know?
Yeah. Well, the image of yours that I described as looking like something from an M. Night Shyamalan film, you should put that on the Shutters Inc. page.
I shall.
I know you've posted it on your own
page. No, I'll do that now.
Page. Yeah, I really like it. It's a great image.
It's a cool little shot.
It's a bit like the, we were talking last week about happy accidents.
That's it. Yeah, exactly right. And that's what I was aiming for. I mean, look, the image you're talking about, I set the red hooded model, not person, up where they are.
Yeah.
Because I saw these people coming down the street and I knew they were going to be going down these stairs. So, I mean, I set the shot is set up, the composition is set up, but what happened as far as the movement was the unpredictability.
Right.
So the shot itself was actually planned as far as I had, 30 seconds to think about it and plan it.
Yep.
But the end result, because you're hand holding half second shutter speeds and your subjects are moving.
Yep.
Who knows what you're going to get out of it. So, and that's part of the feel of that shot is that unpredictability.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All fun and games.
Absolutely. So
it's just an observation. It was just about the difficulty of shooting. Sometimes it's not always easy. It doesn't always just switch on. And don't beat yourself up, people, if that's a place you're at sometimes. I said, had someone come to a workshop the other day saying they'd lost their fojo, the photo mojo. Yeah?
Yeah.
Go easy on yourself. It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just relax. Yeah. Just try to do something stupid and have a laugh and things will start to happen for you. So
definitely. Anyway. Definitely. All right, mate. Well, good to chat again.
It was lovely. I've got to say, it was lovely catching up with you on the weekend.
It was great. And that burger, was awesome.
Man, I'm thinking about going back for next year's Vivid just for that.
That was really nice.
Of course, that's if someone will put me up with a $400 hotel room to fly me up there. But, I'm cheap. Well, I'm easy to convince anyway.
Now, you were about to say something. Sorry.
I think I finished.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, mate. Well, good talking to you again.
And you.
And
take care, everybody.
Talk again next week.
Be good to yourselves.
Bye.
Shutters Inc.
another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shutterzincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email thevoice@shutterzincpodcast.com.